No slides, so I wasn't expecting to do this bit. So it's an open forum discussion about these last couple of questions on the agenda of what is the value of Cornwall's cultural and heritage assets and how do we quantify these? And then what further research or knowledge gaps need to be filled to achieve a sustainable Cornwall? And I think they've been touched in all sorts of ways through the day, haven't they? So I suppose... Would you like a specific outcome of a list of research questions? Or
yeah, we could do. I mean, we could actually talk about some of the projects that's already been planned in any case or starting. Caitlin, would you like to speak on that?
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm Caitlin DeSilvi, and I'm a senior lecturer here in the ESI, but I'm also a cultural geographer. And Gary has been kind enough to let me just take a few minutes to tell you about a couple of projects that are just beginning that are very much related to the ideas that we've been talking about here today. And it's really around that second question, the future research. So just to give you a little bit of background about where I'm coming from, my work is much, a lot of my work is on cultural heritage, but it tends to be about heritage and change and environmental change particularly. So I've been working closely with the National Trust at Mullion Harbour for the past 7 years, and talking to them about how they negotiate the transition between the harbor being present and the harbor being gone, and also getting involved in some of the issues that have evolved, that have emerged recently around the conflict of letting go of a heritage feature when it has listed status and protections that are actually constraining the options that you have for adapting to change. But the projects I wanted to throw out today are really, one of them doesn't begin till next April, the other one's just begun, and we're still at the stage where we actively need research partners and collaborators and people telling us what's going on the ground, so that's why I wanted to just mention them. The first one is called Heritage Futures, and that's a large project led by UCL, funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council, which has a really big remit around rethinking the way we do heritage, and it has partners in the UNESCO, National Trust, IUCN. It works across natural and cultural heritage. I won't give you the whole picture there, but maybe the important thing to know there is that I'll be leading a case study here in Cornwall in the clay country, and the questions that we're going to be asking there are about how a post-industrial transitional landscape like the clay country thinks about what aspects of its landscape it brings into the future with it. So what is the cultural value of the tips and of some of the spontaneously regenerated landscapes that have been talked about today, and how do people locate their sense of identity in places like that that are actually still changing? They're not fixed heritage objects. And we're working with Wheel Martin, the Eden Project, the Environment Agency, and a group called Future Terrains on that project. And Gary and I are going to be co-supervising a PhD studentship, which will be advertised in the next couple of months as well. So anyone who has an interest in that region or would like to help us figure out what the real questions are, please do get in touch with us about that. And then the second one is another UK-wide project, and this one is an interdisciplinary project which is about drought and water scarcity, which seems perverse to talk about that in Cornwall on a day like today. But there are moments of water scarcity, and we've all experienced them, and there were even mutterings outside my window in Constantine this summer about hosepipe bans passed when we had those dry June and September stretches. So this project is really about thinking about how we will respond to future water scarcity, but trying to do that by thinking about what knowledge we actually have in our communities in relation to past water scarcity. So we're working in the Foy catchment for that project, and we will be combining the sort of hard science of hydrological modeling and scenarios around future water scarcity with narratives contributed by local people who live in that area, and holding workshops where people will chat about their experience of past drought. And that project in particular, we're very keen to have an active local advisory group. So if anybody thinks that they would like to be involved in that, I'd be very welcome to chat with you afterwards about that. But hopefully that gives you a sense of projects that are very actively trying to link up an attention to the past and to culture and heritage with futures and how we move forward. So yeah, that's just throwing a couple things out there. I'll be around afterwards to chat if you want to.
Thank you, Caitlin. Yes, anything to add to what Caitlin said?
Because the cards in the air are quite useful.
Yes, that's true. Caitlin.
Just saying that our Cornish bards, we have them all over the place, and I'm sure there'll be some that would be very willing to help you with your projects.
That would be wonderful. Yes. Maybe we can exchange details afterwards.
There's a catchment partnership in the Foy area, I think. Is that part of the nature partnership? Is Foy included in that?
We're working with Lindsay at the Environment Agency and Tom Fletcher.
Okay, yeah.
That. Is that their problem?
They'll be very much woven into that then.
Okay.
Yes, and I think I've got all sorts of connections that we should probably talk, but not here. So that's, very positive.
Open it back up.
All right.
Anything?
Got
something
else?
Yeah, it's okay.
Bit of an elephant in the room, and I don't know if I'll be very popular for raising it.
Howard Lyons.
Yeah, Howard Lyons. Let me begin by being very blunt about the value of the ESI. I think that in terms of what you deliver through the ESI, you're punching well above your weight. I've been to quite a lot of different events here, and the networking that goes on has been exemplary, and actually, from quite a lot of experience, I'd say verging on remarkable. What bothers me reflects back on a lot of these sort of conversations we've had earlier today, and that's the intellectual capital in the county and the investment in intellectual capital. Now, the numbers I come up with may not be on the money, but they'll be ballpark correct. If you take cities like Sheffield and Leeds, which have similar populations to Cornwall, you've probably got in the region, in both of those cities, 70,000 students in each of them, in two large universities, and the academic infrastructure behind that. If you look at the old universities in those cities, the staff-student ratios are whatever they are. The teaching hours, and certainly this was borne out when I did some work at Exeter, seem to be 6 to 8 hours per member of staff. If you look at the new universities, they probably are trying to keep down to 14. I did a bit of work a few years ago now for Cornwall University, and the teaching hours on the master's programme, the staff were delivering 32 hours. Doing great work. I was absolutely bowled over by the quality of teaching and the work they were doing with the students. But in terms of the available intellectual capital in the area, there's just too few of you, and with certainly regard to the advanced further education sector, they haven't got much time for research. There's a huge disproportionate gap between what goes on here and elsewhere. And I think to really start to support, and again, you know, I can be highly critical of Cornwall Council and the officers, but I think the work that's delivered under the circumstances and with a reducing manpower, person power, I think again the work that's being delivered is actually admirable. But you just haven't got the support. We need to be making a much louder noise about getting it proper investment and getting the right number of staff and students.
Anybody like to
talking to?
Tim?
You know I'll have a view on that, don't you, Gary? Which is always, I mean, obviously it's speaking to a lot of issues. But I don't think that's just an issue for Cornwall Council. I think that's an issue for the universities on this campus about what they think their project here is. And, of course, in the case of Exeter, those decisions are not being made necessarily in Cornwall. And that's an issue that should be being asked of it. I also think there's a more general question here about the university sector. One of the things that would trouble me slightly about what's being delivered in terms of, if you're talking about intellectual capital, and I would want to measure that in terms of ideas and the exchange of ideas and challenging ideas, is actually what has happened in terms of what this campus is about in terms of adult education as a question in Cornwall, and how much we're actually contributing to that because it's not simply about undergraduate students coming in at 18 and then going off, hopefully, into a very successful future career, there are other forms in which that education can take place, and I think certainly continuing education, adult education, across the country is in a crisis. And it would be interesting to know what certainly people from Cornwall Council, but also the community in general, think that we can do or should do here in terms of addressing that question.
I don't think either Rowena and I are sort of conferring here on the adult education question. I don't think we probably know, and it's not our remit to necessarily think about that. So if we had to think about it, maybe we'd come up with something to say, but it's an interesting and good point. I think one of the things that I've reflected on about this institute and also the European Centre for Environment and Human Health that we're lucky to have here, in terms of the crossover from policy, the point you're making about the pressure on universities and then also the pressure on the council, is that actually we are both stuck apart because all of our funding doesn't actually try to reach us together. So the academics get funding in, which takes them to the point of publishing their papers and getting an academic outcome, not an applied outcome often. And we in the applied sector have resource to do what we're supposed to be doing, but not necessarily to stretch it forwards a long way. I'm very encouraged that work that I am having the opportunity to do with this institute, because of the Local Nature Partnership and because of Kevin Gaston's involvement in that, my department has become actually very aware of what's going on here, and now we're actually finding and talking about doing joint bids, where in some circumstances there is funding now coming through to say, how do they use academic outcomes to inform public policy? So not for profit, which often is the case for the additional funds for research at the moment, but for public policy. So that's an encouraging step, but it's actually very unusual. Money specifically to try and bridge the gap isn't really there. You probably know that yourself, but I think that's one of the next steps for us in Cornwall to take, is to move from having these sort isolated at some level in institutions, not by their own choice but by necessity, to actually networking them genuinely together and providing the resource that is needed to do that, because actually it takes time, it takes focus and takes products and resource supports to actually make those working relationships happen. So that's been my observation of the benefits of having the institutions here, and the next step on is to actually really network them together.
I would agree with that view. As far as adult education, I can't comment on that. I don't really understand the setup in Cornwall. What I can say is that there is a myriad of charities and social enterprises out there that are delivering adult education, and one that comes to mind to me is Point Europa out at Maker Heights. They are a charity. I think they set up about 2004. They've been going quite a time, but they've successfully tapped into European funding directly from Europe through an Interreg project. Even in my own community, Lou Development Trust deliver adult ed, a whole range of things as a charity. So I think that the sort of the structure of that continuing education is more than just an adult ed department, as far as I can see. Whereas there's one in Helston as well, at the old cattle market has been converted into a sort of charitable business hub type thing. So I think there is stuff out there. Whether it's well coordinated and it's comprehensive, then there's probably gaps and there's inequality, I agree, and maybe that's something that needs to be looked at. Because that not everybody can afford to go to university or wants to come to it late in life. They need to work it around their family life or their childcare or their parent care, in my case. So there needs to be a flexibility around it. So that's maybe something to look at. I don't know the answer to that one, but just an observation.
could I try and plug some of those gaps? I'm on the adult education board, and it's a very strange week to ask this question because we have got an inspection by Ofsted going on at present, and I was one of the councillors interviewed by them with some quite tough questions on Tuesday. And I think adult education, my impression is that it isn't really relevant to the question that was asked, because my interpretation is that it's mainly about helping people who perhaps didn't get on well at school, don't have basic skills in things like English and maths, to try to help them get a new start. So it is struggling financially, like a lot of council services, but we're trying to make the best of it. The other thing I will say is that, again, I'm one of the Cornwall councillors who works with the Institute of Cornish Studies, as Gary knows. That's another respect in which the relationship between Cornwall Council and other agencies is changing, in that there isn't likely to be the small direct funding that there is. But there is a meeting which has been set up next week, next month, for a number of Cornwall councillors, including the leader of the council, John Pollard, to meet with the university to try to talk about future relationships. And certainly with my background in research and the links that several other Cornwall councillors have with this institution, I think you can be assured that we're going to try the best we can within the current difficult situation to keep the relationship as productive for both as we can.
Well, just to finish off the Cornwall Council quad, as it were. I mean, like Rachel, we're interested in the Economic Development and Culture Service in thinking about how we can actually use some of the research work that we've done and we do to support projects, etc., to link into what the Institute is doing. And I think there's some conversations also to be had with our new colleagues in environment. The other thing to think about, to remember, is the Employment and Skills Board, which is a part of the Local Enterprise Partnership. Now, the Employment and Skills Board has got a dual focus. One is on the higher level skills, which come out of the university, and we are closing the gap nationally with those level 4 plus skills. But the other is the lower level skills and some of those issues that could be tackled through adult education. There is a longer term, there is a real issue at the moment about how we go forward with supporting work and skills activity and ESF in terms of European funding, and getting that European, the next convergence phase into Cornwall, and making sure that we can get that working. But the key point about the Employment and Skills Board is it's dominated by very able private sector individuals. So there's another important partnership there, I think. And if you want my opinion, I think we're doing better in terms of those higher level skills, but there is an issue about how we deal with things such as underemployment and self-employed people actually not having enough hours, flexibility in the labour market. So there's an awful lot to be done. And if anything comes out of today, it's just the need to sort of knit some key things together.
I think it's very true, actually, what you were just saying. The old positive thing about this is at least these things are coming together, getting together academia, getting together community groups, getting together Cornwall Council. That's the way forward. And also then providing a sort of like international context, links with Europe, etc. That surely is the way forward.
Thank you. One more small piece of the jigsaw, but I do think that it's relevant today. I act as a tutor for the WEA, and I run a course called Writers and Literature of Cornwall. So we do have something on this, and there are other aspects of education for adults available in Cornwall. Workers' Educational Association, on the ground in local communities for local people, maybe by local people. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd just like to put a word in and promote MOOCs. Are you familiar with MOOCs? No. Massive open online courses started in the UK, set up by the Open University October last year. They run from 3 weeks to 8 weeks. Not everybody's interested or has the funds to do formal learning. These are computer online courses, completely free, worldwide, and they're amazing. I've just done a course with Berkeley University called The Science of Happiness, ran for 10 weeks, and it had 112,000 students from it and applied. The climate change course I did with the OU in this country, that was something in the order of tens of thousands of people doing it. But nobody see, or a lot of people don't seem to know about them. That they're every time I mention, there are people say, "Let me make a note of that." I've no idea. Brilliant. I don't watch the TV now. I sit and do a MOOC.
I'm aware of time for Colette, actually.
Yeah, I guess for one kind of last push in terms of what would be useful for us, and going back to the Wordle and all your very kind feedback and top line themes about your vision of a sustainable Cornwall or some of the challenges obviously that we face culturally, what are the research projects that we should be taking on to address or, you know, contribute solving some of these issues? Because getting your viewpoint on that is gold dust, really.
Would it be possible to have a summary of what everyone said, perhaps anonymously, if people were comfortable about that? Because that might actually help the thought process.
These podcasts will go online next week. You'll be able to hear everything.
Sorry, I don't mean what's said here. Okay. I mean what we wrote, what we wrote in before the questionnaire.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. That's no problem. I can do an anonymous kind of bullet point.
That'd be really helpful. Because I think therein lies the way to sort of connect some ideas together and think about what might be relevant in terms of pitching relevant research.
Yeah.
Hopefully include web links, because there's a lot of this stuff online as well, so these have been produced by us, I guess.
Sorry, where do these lie?
Question, what is a sustainable Cornwall University provision? What is a sustainable university provision for Cornwall?
Okay, thank you.
So where did you want the ideas for research to go to?
Well, basically for both institutes, so that we can...
Do you have an actual email address? People will have ideas after this event.
If you email me, that would be great.
Rev Davey, Cornish Gorseth. I would like to know more about the cultural pound and the heritage pound. It comes up quite a lot, but I don't know how much it's worth. You know, we need an audit of tourism. We need to know what areas actually do produce money and what areas leech money out of Cornwall, as I'm sure many do. So it's an area there. What part of our culture, what part of our heritage earns us money, and what part of our tourist industry leeches money out of Cornwall? Mm.
I think New Economics Foundation have done quite a lot of research with sort of leaky bucket sort of scenarios and things like that. I've had a web link I mentioned in part of the feedback I left on that. Might be worth following up.
Another question. What is a sustainable happiness measure for Cornwall?
We'd be very interested
in that one too. Yes. There's a lot of stuff on the internet.
The current Prime Minister was pushing it.
Once
pushed
they
have
it. They
final
do
question from Richard. Can I just pick up on Merv's point, which is to do with culture and the economy? Because I don't know whether it's just me, but I accept that part of the tourist economy is Cornish culture, but I also have problems with commodifying culture and saying that, you know, I mean, to use Merv's example, I mean, Padstow May Day celebrations, all right, people come to Padstow, but would Padstow not hold those celebrations if people didn't come? Because as far as I understand it, it's part of the culture of Padstow, that it's going to happen come hell or high water.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So in other words, that there are elements of culture which you cannot put a monetary value on. And I suppose I'm dubious about some of what appears to be Cornwall Council's approach to link culture with the economy, because as I understand it, the people who are responsible for the cultural bit sit in the economic unit. Now, that might be okay as a sort of way of trying to avoid silos and all that sort of stuff, but it does seem to me to, unless there's some safeguards built in, to commodify what Cornish culture is about, and I have a problem with that.
As a test, you want to ask Padstow not to hold it one year?
Well, they will hold it, as you said, to come out of high water. It's not a...
It might be above my pay grade to respond to that, because I work in the Economic Development and Culture Service, and for me, as an officer, it works. It's not about commodifying culture. It's about realising that culture is an asset for Cornwall and harnessing that asset. I mean, Cornwall has had arguably 40 years plus, certainly in terms of modern Cornwall, economic problems. There are 10,000 jobs in the culture sector. That's beyond tourism. So it's not about tourism. It's about things like, for example, Crescent Curnow delivering economic opportunities for a place like Redruth and regenerating a brownfield site. So it works, and the council's moving to a position because of the funding pressures towards, and I'm sorry to use a jargonistic word, placemaking, but that's about all of us as officers and members working more closely together with communities to try and deliver more sustainable places. So as an officer, I don't make any apologies for it. I think, my view is it works, and it's not about commodifying it. It's about realising and supporting an asset that we've got and making it work better.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not about commodifying it. It's about giving it a profile that if it was sat on its own somewhere else, that it wouldn't have. We talk about economic growth. It is sort of common parlance. It's accepted. Environmental growth is becoming more of a understood of what it means. But I think cultural growth and culture in itself, at the moment, if it wasn't attached to economy, I think it may well fall between the cracks of funding cuts. At least it weds it to the economy, which is really, really important to Cornwall and gives it equal status.
Time's against us, I'm afraid, so we have to draw this discussion to a close. I'd like to thank all our speakers today. I'd like to thank the ESI for enabling us to put this event on and working in partnership with us. I'd also like to thank Cornwall Council for your contribution in supporting this event. Also, I'd like to thank Matthew, there he is, so I'll put you over there, for standing going around today.